Hearst Ranch is a proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. Learn more about Hearst Ranch at HearstRanch.com.
This week on Meat and Three, we're exploring interactions from drug studies in a laboratory.
If this effect is as big as he's saying, somebody should have discovered this long before he did.
To global wisdom on avoiding hangovers.
Beber cerveza antes de tomar vino no previene los síntomas.
Bière sur vin est venant, vin sur bière est belle manière.
Beer before wine, you're going to be fine. Wine before beer, you're going to be queer.
To the novel recipes developed by an Indian American family deep in the heart of Texas.
And then my mom's sort of coming to America and learning that white parents love to melt cheese on things to get their kids to eat it. She was like, this is genius.
Be sure to subscribe to Meat in Three. That's MEAT+THREE. Available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Good morning. Thanks so much, G. This is the main course OG. Today is Thursday, May 2nd. I'm in studio with Patrick Martins, my co-host.
Three OGs in the house. One, two, three.
For sure. I've got Brandon Hoy.
Yep, we're all back.
Awesome. And I'm Emily Pearson. Our guest this week for the Weekly Grill is Chef Joe, am I going to say this right? Mangipano?
Spot on.
Really?
And people never get that.
So. Mangipano?
Bravo. Yeah,
way to go.
Awesome. Do you speak Italian?
Not at all.
Joe is the chef of Employees Only here in New York City. And I really thought you were Italian. I thought you were going to tell me about some deep roots there.
I am Italian, but yeah, like zero roots. Just one of the most Italian names, but yeah.
All right. Patrick will give you some lessons. He speaks fluently. We also have calling in our regular panelist and publisher of the Alameda Sun, Eric Koss. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. Bringing you a little West Coast flavor.
We love that. And a little sunshine, apparently.
Indeed. It's another sunny day in paradise.
7 a.m. there, and he said the sun's already out, and he's having a better looking day than we are.
And he's sailing in the bay. His hair's blowing in the wind.
Yeah, delivering 24,000 newspapers and, driving with the top down.
Yeah, 24,000 papers hitting right now throughout Alameda. That's crazy.
So since last week's show, some big things have happened. Brandon, you weren't with us last week. I want to fill you in on my week and how it's been.
I felt like I was here.
I know. Mm. I know you were listening. Most importantly, I'm now famous, and I think Tyra Banks knows what Goatober is. So for those of you who don't know, Patrick knows. I accepted a James Beard Book Award on behalf of our good friend James Wetlaw of Cabrito. He's based in London. He could not attend. He was nominated for his book Goat, and he assured me he would not win. He's like, but I think it would be cool. Like, I have a ticket, go to this party, no big deal. You'll be great. Like, have fun. Bring your husband. He's like, well, you need to get an extra ticket for him. And I'm like, oh, I'll go by myself. So I make one friend, the guy sitting next to me. Thank God I made one friend, because when it comes around to it, I'm like, so I'm here, in place of a nominee. I'm like, what do you think I should do if he wins? And he's like, well, did he give you a speech? I'm like, no. He told me he wouldn't win. And he's like, well, you have to go up. You have to. And then it comes around to the single subject book section. And sure enough, Goat wins. And I'm like, first of all, they had not poured our table any wine. No wine was poured.
Oh, you went sober?
Dead sober. An hour into the whole thing, Tyra Banks spoke.
I would like to thank my mother, panel, everyone at James Beard.
Booyah, we're number one.
So I had Patrick in my head, who had made some joke to that effect, like, oh, me? Emily Pearson? I won? You shouldn't have.
Emily style would be like this. I was so honored to be picked. For these reasons, that I would give a good speech, that people would like me.
Well, congratulations to James. I went up. I totally winged it.
You did very good. I saw
there was video evidence, I found out after a day later. And I think at the very least, people understood the connection between Goatober. I got a little plug for Heritage Foods. My table told me it was very well done, and it was not embarrassing. So anyway, Tyra Banks the whole time was looking at me smiling, and she was like, oh,
good for you.
I was definitely sweating. It was nerve wracking, but it was good.
Well, good luck. Good job. Thanks. I mean, you're going to become famous now, and just you know, try not to show up late to the show, or you know, not all take right, our calls.
Isn't this how it begun? And a star is born. She accepts a speech for. Yeah.
She gets brought up on stage.
Profound book writer.
Yep. Yeah. So starting our weekly based, we came up with our first question because we just came back from Fishtown in Philadelphia, which is a great neighborhood. They had so many cool restaurants there. There was great energy. We saw Feta Sau. We saw Bedia.
Mm-hmm. Pizzeria Bedia.
We saw that cool sandwich shop that just opened.
Liberty Kitchen, which is like a provisions meat and cheese, but they're really getting to be known for their hoagies. They just opened.
And what's the name of the really great Middle Eastern restaurant?
Saraya.
Saraya, which
is like 10,000 square feet with this beautiful garden. Take your girl there. Joe, our guest today is going.
We went last week. It was awesome.
Oh, well.
I was in Saraya last week. It was amazing.
So we were driving back.
Wait, I have an important question if you're going to Philly. Mm-hmm. Do you know what a John is?
I know what a John is.
Okay, tell us. Patrick and I learned yesterday.
A John, really, it's one of those weird Philly slang things where it could be anything. a person could be a John.
The kind.
Yeah. Your beat up car can be a John.
It's spelled J-A-W-N. So it's, yes. But I thought the guy was calling Patrick a John. Well, and then he's like, but you can be a John.
There was a sandwich called the Veggie John. And I was like, is that a play on yawn? Because meat sandwiches without meat are boring. And he was like, no, that's a Philly word for anything and everything.
It's one of those weird Philly slang things. It's kind of like same, but different with like the New York dead ass.
Like, I think dakine is the same. That's like the Hawaiian word for anything you want it to be.
Yeah. Oh, is that where the? Oh,
yeah,
I never knew.
It's a positive.
That.
You're like, oh, that, you know, that's that whatever over there is dakine.
Oh,
you're like, oh, I guess that's cool. My car's dakine.
The only problem is when you leave that city and you try to use that term, people just look like you just said it, and I just looked at you like you misspoke. I'm like,
totally.
What do you mean?
Yeah.
So on our way back, we came up with predict the New York and Alameda restaurant scene 200 years from now. Any aspect of it, the vibe, the food, will there even be any restaurants left? So, you know.
Well, I mentioned this before. You know, I think there's going to be some kind of technology where you can just kind of like walk up to the machine and say, hey, I'd like a pheasant under glass, you know, immediately, and it just produces it for you molecularly.
3D printed food.
Yeah, exactly.
Like
there
the Jetsons, right? Like, yeah.
One of the
sure
chefs
enough,
we
Star Trek.
One know, of the chefs we saw hot. Yesterday, he said that he thinks that everything will be a hotel. So everything will be like a restaurant within a hotel. There will just be hotels on every block, and it's all going to be consumed by these sort of larger corporate formats. I don't know.
I think all the restaurants will be off the ground floors because of flooding and all that and just crazy temperatures. So most restaurants will be on the third or fourth floor or even higher. And then the one or few restaurants left still on the ground floor will like promote that and like eat like in the Little House on the Prairie days outside in a hazmat suit, but outside.
I could definitely see like kitsch restaurants. Like, look, it's like the old days where you eat at a table.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Right. Well, yeah. Yesterday, as we were driving to Philly, Patrick was like, "What do you think it's going to be like in 200 years?" Like, I don't know. Maybe we'd be flying to Philly, like flying vehicle. And he's like, "No, you would still go to Penn Station. It would just be a faster train." Sure.
What do you think? I mean, do you ever think about Roberta's in 200 years of your
life? Oh, constantly. Pretty much every day. It's really just like part of my everyday like play. Like I sit down, I think about what Roberta's was going to be like in 200 years. And then I work backwards from there to try to achieve that. That's
what
like
are you right at 2100 right now? Like
2100, exactly.
Like who's going to work Thursday?
Yeah, exactly. I already have a schedule for, yeah. 2155.
Is it filled out a little bit?
Yeah.
A couple people.
All right. So it's, you know, it's 10 a.m. I think it's about time to talk about cocktails. We have Chef Joe here of Employees Only. And
historic restaurant for cocktail culture in America.
But you're the chef.
I am
what
the
is
chef.
That? What does sort of that relationship mean? Is there an interaction between the bar and the chef the way there is with like a sommelier and the kitchen? Is the menu, you know, are they entwined? Does the wait staff suggest a cocktail that does well with a certain dish if
Very
someone's
much
ordering
so, yeah.
food?
Yeah. like during pre-meal every day, I usually, you know, bring out a dish or two. We all try it. And then I'll have one of the bartenders, yeah, pair something with that dish, something you could recommend. Because, I mean, if you have a good wine, most good wine will go well with most food, I feel. Mm-hmm. But it's tricky to, like, pair a complex, weird cocktail with some food. And then you might have someone who, like, but I don't like whiskey.
Right.
So it's, like, one of those things, like, all right, well, make a gin cocktail with that. Because it's easy to pair whiskey, you know, with that meal. So
were there any rules, like, meats that go with certain, like, tequilas or whiskey or?
Yeah, kind of, I mean, I wouldn't say rules, but I mean, there's definitely like the, you know, whiskey and a steak goes well together. So it's almost tricky to be like, if you have like a red meat dish where it's easy to pair like an old fashioned with a heavy red meat dish. It might be tricky to be like, but if you have a customer who's like, no, I don't like whiskey, make a gin drink with that. So
does it ever go the other way though, where the bar's like, we want to do this really cool cocktail, like, chef, can you make a dish? Or are they just, they're going to do a special cocktail at the bar with or without the food pairing?
No, the bar does what the bar does there. They do it great. So
what's cool at employees only is the bar, the bartenders wear chef jackets.
Yeah. It long story, but, it's actually become a nickname of a few of the bartenders of Chefy. Oh. Because people will call them Chefy.
You're like, you're stealing my, you're stealing my title.
Very pioneering that exists, because I mean, most I don't recall ever being recommended a cocktail with a certain food, and yet almost every time I go out, I will be told a good wine with it, or even a beer. Sometimes it'll just be paired on the menu. So yeah, it's really pioneering.
How long has employees only been there? 20.
I think 13 years now.
13.
Yeah. That's it.
And how long have you been the chef there?
I've worked there for the last 3.5. I took on the position as sous, and I've been the chef there for about 7 months now.
Nice. Congratulations.
Thank you.
So you were not there during the Julia Jacek era.
I was not. So I started because Julia left to go open her spot in Nashville, Rose, and then Jackson took over. Mm-hmm. And then I took over for Jackson.
He moved on to Vegas.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And Julia's in Nashville. Does that mean you're leaving next? No.
No,
you
told me you're in New York.
It is a hotbed though. It has been for years of like people moving through and kind of coming out of that.
It's one of the best places to eat, and it's a cocktail bar.
Yeah, solid. Like both in the kitchen and in the bar, you just see it has like a very good tree, like. What do they call that? A family tree, I guess, where all these people go out and open their own things.
Oh, yeah.
It produces some high-quality hospitality folks.
For sure. Well, the owner originally came from Pravda, right? Which was one of my favorite places to go.
Yeah, a few of the guys were there, yeah.
That was such a cool bar underground.
I've never been, but I've heard many a story that I can't repeat on.
You guys are also leaving out the fact that you can't go into employees only if it's full. Or if you don't have a reservation. Like, it's this very cool, like...
They have a fortune teller there to help stall if it's... No, you can go in whenever you want, but, I mean, sometimes it's just too full.
I mean, I've never had that problem.
Me neither. I mean, come on. Well, aren't we rolling with some VIPs? We're here with Chef Joe.
I mean, you did look at Tara Banks, like, in the eyes. So you're definitely a famous person.
I think so.
So what about cocktail etiquette? I mean, I see people, you know, what's do's and don'ts for customers, listeners out there? Like, oh, vodka drinks are bad or.
I will never tell anyone a spirit to drink, you know, that's personal. Mm-hmm. The main thing I will say, and this goes with any bar, I think, etiquette, I think for anyone, know what you're going to order when you're ready to order.
That's Patrick.
I think also also never snap your fingers.
Oh, never, never, never.
That's like probably the worst thing you could do to a bartender ever is just like the reach.
Anyone
and snap.
Serving you.
Yeah, it's really
anyone
horrible.
Serving, don't snap.
Can you open your eyes like this, like really wide and be like,
there's plenty of flat. Yeah, that's a good one, actually. I wish the people at home could see what you just did. Your eyes almost like, came out
like
of your head.
Like one of those little children's
but what
toys.
About like I don't know? Is there like tipping? Do you always have to tip like at least $5 on a cocktail? Yeah,
six.
But you should always tip.
No, $1 tip for a drink that took 15 minutes to make. That's a $3, $4, $5. I mean, you're spending $18. It's like an appetizer. It's the same as an appetizer.
Eric, how's cocktail culture in Alameda?
Oh, actually, I'm not like a huge drinker, kind of, but I wanted to get like a sneak tip about. From Joe, like if I were to go and order a cocktail, what would be a good pairing? Like, what is a popular pairing these days of cocktails and dinner?
I don't know if there's like a popular pairing, because I feel especially when going out to eat at a cocktail restaurant, like, people have like the things they like and things you like, things you don't like. Like, there are people I know, especially with like liquor, where like I feel most people are creatures of habit, where you know what you like. Like, if you like whiskey, you're most likely drinking like whiskey and bourbon cocktails. If you like vodka, you're most likely drinking vodka cocktails. So it's kind of like, what's your personal preference, I guess? I guess there's no
pick
like,
your poison first.
Gin. Yeah. Gin. I always go gin.
Right. Yeah. You know, I do like gin sometimes, but I go with the traditional, you know, gin and tonic or whatever, just kind of boring stuff.
Is a martini an insult? Just a straight up martini?
Not at all.
To a great rest.
I also don't think a gin and tonic is it as. I mean, that is a classic.
I don't think it's boring.
I think most bartenders, even like real professional bartenders, have a lot of respect for the gin and tonic.
A well-made gin and tonic is good, and bartender will love you, especially at a cocktail bar if you're ordering a gin and tonic.
It is so much easier. You will be a very popular man. You'll be like, yeah.
Well,
I nailed
these days there's like artisanal tonics. Some people make their own. I think that there's so many more like local gins. People are definitely promote. You know, half the time you might ask them for a Hendrick's martini, and they're like, oh well, we don't have Hendrick's, but we have these from these four local sources, or these are the ones we've chosen.
So does pre-batching, or, you know, cocktails in a bottle or wine in a can, you know, does that bother you? Cocktails in a bottle?
I feel I need to say I'm speaking for my own personal self, not the company.
Right.
I have no problem with those. I think they're great. Time and place. Definitely a cocktail in a can is not going to come close to like a properly made, like, bespoke cocktail. But
also, you don't have the bartender from EO like sitting on the beach with you.
Exactly.
So and it's if that's what's in your bag, it's probably a better option than, you know, whatever else.
I'd rather have a cocktail in a can personally than like a bunch of beers at the beach. I would rather have like
when you go to like beach bar and it's like you look and you're like, oh man, everything is disgusting. They're putting, it's like, I'm going to get a Midori sour. Like, what is all this stuff they have here?
I'm not opposed to
Midori sour, I know.
I was going to say like frosé, but you know, sorry.
I've seen frosé in a can. I've seen frosé in a bag, which was great. Oh. It was like a Capri Sun with booze. It was great.
What do you do? You just put it in your own freezer?
Yeah, you put it in your freezer, and then from my experience, you walk around Puerto Rico drinking a cocktail in a bag. It was,
I don't know, it's like a little kid's go-gurt.
That's
like
awesome.
I like it.
You get workout while you're doing it.
Yeah, I got to find those.
I think it's maybe just like another excuse to create more disposable waste in the world, unfortunately.
Bay Area.
Where's
expert.
Your sound effect, man?
He's like, it comes with seven straws.
Yeah.
It's like a Capri Sun, but the whole back of it's like tape got straws on it. So you could throw, like, take one sip and throw your straw out in the ocean.
Is California officially banned the straw?
My little city of Alameda, was one of the leaders in the straw ban. And yeah, so we have bamboo straws and
metal straws.
Paper straws and metal straws. And
I like metal straws because
don't
it cold.
I don't like the metal
straws.
They get
cold with the ice. Yeah, yeah,
paper is the worst. It's like,
I'll take metal.
Metal over paper. Paper, like soft paper in your mouth. Oh my God.
I don't think
I would rather have a tinfoil straw.
The paper straws are disgusting. You end up with paper in your mouth. But I don't believe that those metal straws come clean. I don't know.
What about the lemon sitting in your drink? You think that's ever been washed?
I don't overthink that one. And I don't. I try not to think about how many people have manhandled
that. I think the
that.
Straw should just be replaced with the beer bong. I think more places should just hurry up and get the drink down your throat.
Yeah.
It's just like, who needs a cup?
Funnel?
Who needs a cup? Who needs a straw? Let's just go. Like, open up, and here we go.
Take care of business.
There's a reason that mono goes around college campuses, you know, a lot faster.
Oh, don't blame the beer bong, please.
Wow. Like, she went to Michigan.
You think that's where they're getting mono from? Come on.
Hey, getting back to the gin for one second, are you guys familiar with the company Hangar One? They do vodka and gin. Uh-huh. They're based here in Alameda. Their distillery is here on the former Navy base that is part of Alameda that is slowly converting to a neighborhood. But we have this section called Spirits Alley, where they're distilling vodka, they're brewing beer, there's a wine company there, and it's becoming like a little bit of a scene. Huh. And they all have a view of the San Francisco skyline because Alameda's directly across the bay. And it's a nice little scene over there. It's kind of a happening thing.
I like cocktail culture. What you said, Chef, is exactly right. I would much rather have a cocktail or two over dinner than five beers, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Chocolate stouts and all that. And I always start with the lighter one, and then I have a heavier one.
I think one of the nice things, honest, about like having a cocktail with dinner is it's usually, I'm not saying always, but usually lighter than like a beer, yeah. So you don't fill up. So you could have like a cocktail or two and you can still eat and you're not leaving your meal like.
Yeah. He's also increasing the check average.
Plus yeah. My favorite beer is a Pilsner beer. So those are so light. Yeah, I would need five or six of those before I would.
One cocktail. Or your table could just bring you a beer bong. They can just fasten it to your seat, right? Like a drip bag. And just, you know, they just.
Roberta's
come
is doing some construction outside. Is that what's going on?
The world's largest beer bong. Yes.
All right. You heard it here first on the main course OG.
You're
just wait for
me.
It.
That is a dangerous thing to advertise.
All right. So, you know, since we have a Bay Area, all things sustainability expert on the phone here, the New York Times yesterday dedicated their entire food section to food and climate change. They listed 11 foods that are being affected by climate, the five cuisines that are best for the environment, and the most sustainable forms of livestock. What do you guys think?
I don't care.
Should we absolutely change our lifestyle?
I have to be honest with you. I totally didn't listen to anything you just said. For some reason, I just fell asleep.
That's the subject.
All right.
That's
you will listen if I at least tell you. We thought this was cool. The five cuisines that are supposedly, you know, the most sustainable and the best for us are Lebanese, Indian, Vietnamese. I didn't read the part about why canned food out of Kansas.
That probably means local.
Something about the prairie and what was the fifth one? I have to check, but I thought it was pretty cool.
No, it was cool that the New York Times food section dedicated themselves to a serious subject and not just like that there's a new pot and pan or that you can braise a chicken. I mean, all that stuff. I'm like, you do need some serious stuff, and that was all serious. Like, I'm gonna keep that issue.
Patrick got in the car and he goes, the food section was amazing today for the first time in like.
Yeah, I always rail against it.
And who wrote this piece?
It was the whole section. So I think many people. Nice. But they really just told you lessons that you know, cows and lamb are the worst. Pigs are actually okay for meat. They were saying like 10 fruits are really going to suffer. Like I think dark cherries are going to get
tart cherries
screwed.
From Michigan, yeah.
And chickpeas are going to go way up because they survive better. So like Montana is like investing in chickpea futures. That they should dedicate more farmland to chickpeas. Weird stuff. So, in other news, Fox Business reports, I'm going to laugh, that shares of Blue Apron are nearing $1, which for all you investors know, means that it will be delisted from the New York City
Stock Exchange. Potentially delisted.
Yeah. What do you guys think? I love it. All that stuff wasn't great stuff. It wasn't great ingredients.
I mean, it's one of those things where I guess depends on the person. I mean, for me, I'm biased. Like, I work in food for a living.
We all are.
Yeah, like, I know how to cook. Yeah. But I guess if you, like, you never learned how to cook and, you know, you went to college and you just ate at the dining hall and now you're an adult and you're like, you don't know how to cook a chicken. Like, I guess the Blue Apron thing was cool. It got people cooking, but I've seen a few of them and they just seemed like it's a TV dinner that you cook.
The meats I get, meats you might have trouble getting, you do like it cooked and all that, but like you can't go to the supermarket and buy a pre-made salad and put oil and vinegar on it? Are you being serious?
The thing is, now you don't even have to do that. It's like, what do you need Blue Apron for? You could go to Amazon Fresh or whatever it is, right? Or what are some of the other ones they have?
That deliver for you or the boxes?
Yeah, that deliver for you.
Yeah, Amazon
and you can
Fresh.
Just go on their site and you can be like, I need a chicken breast. You can look at a recipe on one side of your screen and on the other side of the screen, you could just order the shit off of the recipe.
Well, that's the thing.
You're like, I need some cracked pepper, some chives.
Well, that's the thing. It's kind of like, do you not know how to grocery shop?
Right.
Yeah. Let us take care of this for you. Yeah.
Grocery shopping is incredibly complicated. And if you're a person who's stumped by grocery shopping, we got the thing for you.
Do you not have a kitchen? We got you.
Well, I think part of the thing is like they're saying like a millennial generation doesn't have as many cars or something like that. So they're not, they want everything brought to them. So I think Blue Apron is partly providing that kind of, filling that kind of niche for.
Do you have a door to door?
Don't drive.
Do you have a door to door delivery service for food?
We
in
do.
Alameda?
There's like, I don't know. There's a bunch of them being advertised right now. You know, everybody's got a little app you can download and then place your order and get something delivered either from a restaurant or from a grocery store or, you know, or like these pre-made recipe meal kits or whatever they are. There's quite a few of these businesses.
You also have to remember Alameda is right in the middle of tech world. So everything gets tested right there in that spot. Yep. So all of these places somehow are linked to the Bay Area.
Well, there was, what was that place that went out of business everywhere but the Bay Area? It wasn't Blue Apron. It was one of these food deliveries.
Good Eggs.
Good Eggs, yeah.
Oh, man. You know, I was just on the UC Berkeley campus the other day, and the kids over there are all getting their food delivered by these little robots.
I'm telling you,
little boxes on wheels.
Yeah, they're like rolled across the sidewalk. It's kind of crazy.
You're kidding.
To see them.
Stop.
Where is the video evidence?
I have a photo I can send you right now.
Oh my God.
There was like
this is when we wish we weren't on radio.
How do you show this across the radio waves?
Bring it up on the screen.
I don't trust the robot bringing me my food.
But, yeah. Pretty hilarious stuff.
Well, actually, I don't trust delivery men. What if a delivery man wanted to like urinated in my hamburger before delivering it to me? Like he was just a crazy guy who got a terrible tip.
Well, Amazon is using the drone now, right? You've seen this. The guy who's like been programming has been delivering food to his kids via the drone. So it's, you know, that's
for
not
organs.
A future that's far away from us.
Yeah. Thanks, Brandon.
Yeah.
Carl Sagan here. Wow.
I don't know. Maybe in some way, not that their shares falling and them failing is success, but they were the first in this model. I mean, they're being pushed out by all the other people doing it.
The fact of the matter is this will never go away. This idea, I mean, because this is the new norm, there'll always be some thread of this fabric for who knows how many.
Yeah, I think the point is you can't be the only one in this space. Everybody's doing their own version. They cater to certain diets, to certain ways that people like to receive their goods. People in the Bay Area didn't like
all the
plastic.
Once Costco learns how to do it, like everyone's fucked.
Yeah. What do you mean? Meal kits to serve 40 people at a time, only in large batch?
Totally.
It comes in an Arecibo.
All right, guys.
Where are you going to go from here? What's your next question? You could go anywhere.
Fuck, marry, kill.
Oh,
right.
Wow.
Yay.
Brandon's favorite. Hold on. Brandon is writing the question down so he gets it right.
Are you ready? But it's not for food items this week. This week, a cheesemonger, a fishmonger, or a meatmonger. And I'm going to throw one more in. I don't know what to call this. A greengrocer.
But there's only three options.
It's
so
okay.
What do I do?
Well, kick one to
can
the
I
curb.
Can I have a menage a trois?
Sure, yes.
I want to fuck my cheesemonger.
Well, you already do.
Oh, yeah.
Boom. Yeah.
Wait, is that what she's doing or me?
Her.
Oh, Anne.
Yeah. I'm going to go.
Never trust a fishmonger. All their stuff's a day away from spoiling at all times. They will fuck you.
You're saying fish?
Yeah, fishmonger. You can't trust a fishmonger.
No, they're always trying to sell you something. They're always just trying to get rid of something.
They're trying to fuck you.
Yeah. I'm definitely going to get in front of that one. So let's fuck it.
Right? Kill it. Yeah. Oh, you're going to fuck it to avoid being killed by it?
Yeah, I'm going to fuck it first. That's what I'm going to do. I don't know. I hate this game.
Yeah, really?
I'm going to marry
the green grocer?
The green grocer, for health purposes.
Grocer. I mean, you want a long-term relationship here.
I should have added in the oyster farmer. That you would have liked.
Oh, I would have fucked. I would have fucked the shit out of the oyster farmer. Yeah, this is getting nasty.
Now, if you say you want to fuck your meatmonger, it's going to get real uncomfortable in here.
Well, I thought about this, and I would say I would fuck the cheesemonger because cheese. I would marry the meatmonger because you have that constant meat hookup, and I'm a big fan of a good cut of meat. And nothing against a fishmonger, but like luck of the draw.
Killing it.
Peace, dog.
The fish would kill you anyway, even if the fishmonger didn't. The fish could have some terrible disease where you like break out in hives for the next 50 years. Fish diseases, when you get sick off fish, it's the worst.
And again, nothing
muscles.
Nothing to fish people. Like I love seafood, but like I don't. Y'all come home smelling like fish. I don't want that.
We were gonna go more of the like Julia Child, James Beard, you know, some old classics route. Would that have been better for you, Brandon?
Yes. I would love to fuck Julia Childs.
And James.
Did that come out weird?
Julia's Child.
Wow. I really got a silence on that one.
Oh, man. No? Oh,
Chill
man.
I'm the only one?
Right. No, that voice,
Gee, where
man.
Are you at on this?
Yeah, Gee.
Gee, sorry. Hello, said, break in the song, Gee. Please, save us.
Our engineer, Gee, shout out.
So what is your management style, Chef? And did it change? Ooh. Did you change who you were when you went from Sue to the big guy in there?
I like to think I didn't. My management style is... I guess I'd like to say, like anyone, I try to manage how I like to be managed. I try not to yell. I try not to yell. Yeah, I guess my management style is I trust my team. All my guys, they know what they're doing. So I guess I try and just guide them.
It's a very Steve Kerr approach to your team. You flow like water. Somebody said that before once.
You
like,
said
oh,
that.
It was me.
It was you. Said you're quoting
hang
yourself.
Hang on to any rock
did
I can grab.
Did I quote myself? Holy shit.
My guys are a pro team. Like, I don't need to mold them. I just need to, like, guide them in the right direction. And they got it.
So if you see a mistake happening, do you stop it right there? Or do you let it happen?
I mean, if I see a mistake happening, yeah, I'll stop it right there. If a mistake happens, I'm usually just like, all right. I always just look at it like when you see, I've worked in the restaurant industry for like 20 years. And when you have chefs that are like, will spend 4 or 5 minutes freaking out about a messed up item. I always just look at it like even when I was on the line, especially I'm like, this is time we could be fixing this item.
Yeah,
like,
just fix it.
Relax, dude.
It's like, if it keeps, you try to fix it from happening again. The next time is the one you're worried about, not that time. That's like crying over spilled milk.
Right, but also spending 20 minutes on it doesn't necessarily mean that it'll be fixed the next time.
Right, right.
Sometimes just it's better people just to hate solve you. The problem.
Yeah, just solve the problem.
And then come back to it and say, and hey, if this is what, we can't do this anymore, you know?
If you're freaking out, your guys are going to be freaking out, and then everyone's freaking out, and then, nah.
I try to only freak out on one person in the office, Sedana, so that way everyone else is protected.
Everyone else is neutral.
So what's the thing you hate most about what you have to do? Also now in your new position.
Picky eaters, and that's from every position in the kitchen.
Really?
That's pretty much the only thing I'll say, like, just always. And I think that's any chef. Picky eaters.
If you had your way, would you have a menu that has no accommodations?
Oh, I've joked about that for years.
No substitutions.
No.
I feel like every chef's going to answer that question.
There are
very many that haven't answered.
There are some menus that explicitly say, you know, the kitchen does not allow substitutions. Now, obviously, if you have allergies or certain things.
But today, oh, man. Everyone's
that
allergic.
Does,
everyone has something.
I think that little note, as much as it pisses me off, it dissuades you from asking, or you ask with a little bit more of a gentle, is there any way the kitchen might do this for me?
No, if someone has an allergy, I'm all for that. But man. Ugh.
So my thing is, I do not like when restaurants won't scramble an omelet. I do not like omelets. And there are restaurants that will not like scramble things into your eggs.
You're an early riser.
What does that mean?
You eat a lot of egg things out?
I like brunch.
I actually don't like brunch.
I'm curious. What don't you like about omelets?
I don't like the texture.
All right.
But if you take an omelet and you smash it up,
no,
it's totally fine.
But my point is I say to them, I'm like, can you just don't finish the omelet the way you would and fold it over, just like make it ugly and messy.
I'd probably roll my eyes at that, but I'd do it.
All right, well, thanks a lot.
Why can't it get to your plate and then you make it ugly and messy? Like your fork does the same thing.
Yeah, all right.
Because it's the way it's prepared.
Right.
Emily is banned from Roberta's and
noted. Luckily, neither one of you serve brunch and eggs.
Yeah, they don't need to. Brandon used to run brunch here at Roberta's.
Oh, my favorite. I always loved cooking brunch.
You love putting the egg on that pizza. You love putting the egg on top of the pizza.
Brunch is like one of the worst services to work ever. It's horrible. It's like you can't be clean. It's like, and this is what gets me because I'm like a little crazy, but it's like really a difficult station to be clean on because it's just fast and furious and eggshells and just crap. If you find me a chef who loves brunch service, I want to meet this person.
I don't know anyone who loves brunch service, but I will say there is few feelings more satisfying than finishing like a successful brunch service. Like
where you've done 600 covers.
Yeah.
Everybody left happy and drunk.
I've never had like a dinner service that I've left as accomplished feeling as of like a
well because
busy
you
brunch.
Go into brunch like thinking you're gonna like fail war. Every time you almost like you could unless you've succeeded many times you're probably you woke up in the morning and you're like this is gonna fucking suck.
Oh yeah.
And you think that every Saturday and Sunday when you go there even if you accomplished the few perfect services you still think tomorrow's gonna be shit.
The only time I've on two occasions I've seen a cook walk out of a brunch service.
Wow.
That's where brunch is at.
Yeah.
Well, so I was going to ask everybody, you know, what's the least favorite part of your job? But Brandon, I know the answer. Brunch service.
Definitely.
Eric?
I hated doing brunch service.
We cooked brunch, remember, for 150 Amish people. And Carmen and Ben were making bacon for like 8 hours. Both poor guys.
Well, Patrick asked Chef Carmen from Union's Square Cafe to travel with us to visit all of our Amish farmers. And we did a breakfast and a lunch for 150 people. And, you know, to have bacon ready for 150 people, you start and also in a small, limited kitchen.
But say you're
you
not
start the
use,
night before.
Microwaves, huh?
Yeah,
microwaves.
Oh yes, we had we definitely had electricity.
Hank but Frank, you, we had microwaves. It only gets to like 80 degrees.
Anyway, Carmen basically told us he never wanted to see a piece of bacon ever again.
Yeah. No, brunch can be tough.
All right, Eric. I was gonna say, do you have yep. a least favorite part?
It's hard to pick sometimes, but I think you know, kind of the difficulty is when you get like a contradiction in the same day, where like I got a call from somebody who said, "Oh my paper was out in the street, it wasn't close enough to my door," and then 2 minutes later, I get a call from somebody who was like, "Oh my God, your paper hit my front door and it scared me." It's like you can't ever make everybody happy, right?
It's not about what's on the front page or that you're offending them with the news you cover. It's how you delivered their paper. Wow.
Do you throw, do you hire any school kids like on their bicycles with the baskets?
I wish we could, but you know, those days are over. Like we tried that and we found out that this one kid was like hoarding the bundles of newspapers under his bed when his mom called us. So we decided we should probably go with like adults who, you know, need the money.
I've done this before.
But okay, wait, so a serious question. So these adults, do they still have the bicycles with the baskets on the front? Because that's cute.
No, they are the most hardworking people in the
city. Yeah, they're rolling around in their mini truck delivering papers all day, right?
Yeah, and some of the walkers, you know, carry bundles on their shoulders, you know, in these weird little bags they have and actually walk door to door.
Oh, I remember that weird little bag. I delivered papers. Yeah. You know, the one that goes over your head with the front and the back.
Exactly. Well,
now I know what everyone in this room aspires for their children to be, carrying the dirty newspaper bags. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. Stick around, and we'll be back in a couple minutes with Chef Joe from Employees Only.
Hearst Ranch is a proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. The Hearst family has been raising cattle on the rich, sustainable native grasslands of California's Central Coast for over 150 years. Piedra Blanca Rancho in San Simeon is the original Hearst Ranch, founded by George Hearst in 1865. George's son was the famous publisher William Randolph Hearst. In addition to being known for building the iconic Hearst Castle, William was, like his father before him, an avid rancher. In his words, "I would rather spend a month at the ranch than any place in the world." Thanks to one of the largest land conservation easements in California history, a joint effort with the California Rangeland Trust, the American Land Conservancy, and the state of California, the working landscape at Hearst Ranch will be preserved forever. Learn more about Hearst Ranch at HearstRanch.com.
I'm Serena Snyder, social media director of the documentary film Eating Animals. Eating Animals is an incredible film based on the book by Jonathan Safran Foer and co-produced and narrated by Natalie Portman. It's an urgent, eye-opening look at the economic, environmental, and public health consequences of factory farming. I really love the film because it traces the history of food production in the United States and charts how farming has gone from local and sustainable to a corporate Frankenstein monster, and, you know, we don't like any of that. But instead of being a fear-based documentary, it spotlights the farmers who have pushed back against industrial agriculture with more humane practices. Frank Reese, who is the pioneering heritage turkey farmer in the United States, is featured in the film. He paved the way for heritage turkeys, which he calls standard bred. And he's also in the Heritage Radio Network 10th Anniversary Hall of Fame. So please, if you get a moment, would love if you check out the documentary.
Are you enjoying this podcast? Heritage Radio Network has plenty more. My name is Diane Stemple.
And I'm Elena Santigade, and we're the hosts of Cutting the Curd here on Heritage Radio Network. Featuring interviews with makers and mongers and everybody in between, this show is a downright funky look at the world of artisan cheese.
You can find Cutting the Curd wherever you listen to podcasts and on heritageradionetwork.org.
All right, and we're back. This is the Main Course OG, broadcasting live on Heritage Radio Network from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn. We're here in studio today with Chef Joe, am I going to get it right again? Mangipano.
Spot on.
From Employees Only in the West Village. So, Joe, we read your mom ran a sushi restaurant.
She did.
When you were younger.
Yeah.
First of all, you're not a sushi chef now.
Nah.
What'd you
But
learn?
I can make sushi,
can you?
Actually. Yeah.
You can make raw fish.
Good thing you didn't choose the fishmonger, right?
Now I know what. Yeah. There's
guys,
that would be a weird mom thing. I can make sashimi. You killed the fishmonger.
I can make sashimi.
Yeah, you go to, you go to the market and you buy it.
I actually don't believe you can, because that is not an easy cut.
I don't actually believe you can.
I don't think he has knife skills.
I've seen you use all types of utensils, and it's not like a pretty thing. Nobody's like, wow, check out
Patrick's
over there
best
eating.
Utensil is his fingers.
Can I have the sound effect
for 1 second? His best utensil is his fingers, for sure.
I have good hand-eye coordination. Brendan knows that.
He does, but I don't know if you could cut a perfect piece of sashimi.
I can beat you in wiffle ball.
On that note,
we will find out about that, won't we?
Save the
trends stay the same
for the Roberta's versus Heritage wiffle ball game.
Yeah. It has to happen early, 9 a.m. to noon, but it'll be a great game.
It's going to be a little bit spontaneous because we have to wait until the yard is completely clear of tents.
Okay.
So that we have,
So can we cancel someone's like June wedding to make sure?
Okay. Why? Fuck yeah, let's do it.
Don't park your car in front because I'll hit the cars.
With that wiffle ball that will definitely break the front windshield. So wait, we're going back to your mom having a restaurant. What did you learn growing up in the restaurant business?
Work.
Yeah.
Work hard. Yeah, that's pretty much main thing I was instilled. Like, if you want something, go to work. And also that your mom will fire you if you don't work.
Including at Employees Only. She's like, you're fired.
Does she still have a restaurant?
No, they closed it a few years ago.
Oh.
And now she's retired?
She's retired and just enjoying it.
Yeah, we were talking to a couple chefs yesterday, and Rennie from Fetzau was like, when I retire, Patrick was like, when you retire, you're going to like open your own little, you know, traveling kitchen, deliver to people in the local buildings. And he's like, I will be on the beach.
Well, no, he said there'll be a lot of chef's tables. Like, he would love to have a dinner restaurant for 8 people. That's it. Sometimes it's open, sometimes it's closed.
Every other day, you're just on the beach. Yep. People in Philly apparently like to surf.
Well, there's like the shore down. I don't know.
Yeah, that's not that close. I don't know. So who's your mentor? And what's the lesson you always carry with you? Besides work.
You know, that actually is the lesson that I will always carry with me. And I can't say I have like any specific mentor, but I will say like everyone I've ever worked for and worked with that like I respect, that really is like the number one ethic that has been instilled that works is just work. If you want something, go to work.
I call it industrious. People are always busy. People are always like talking, you know, thinking, you know, pushing forward, staying busy.
Brendan, do you have one lesson you carry with you?
Oh man.
Maybe it was your own. Maybe it was your own advice.
But I like second the sentiment here because it, and I kind of like just, I started in the hospitality business at a very young age. And also at that, in that era of restaurants, you had to work. There was no, you couldn't find a place to hide in a restaurant. So really like just like constantly thinking how I could be doing this better and constantly be working, just work, just keep go powering through. 'Cause
what's the alternative? Just sitting there sullen or not thinking. I mean, the alternative is just so boring.
Or it's just one of those things. Like when people are like, oh, there's not enough time. There's plenty of time. It's just what you make time for. If you want to be good at something, work at it. And eventually you will be good at it if you work at it enough. Some Eric, longer, some shorter.
Eric, did you have something for us? Some wise words?
Yeah. Well, I was just, you know, I was kind of surprised when I opened my business and started working with so many small business owners. Like, how many people actually do not follow that advice and don't work at their own business? They try to hand it off to their employees or take as much time off as possible. And it's excellent advice that putting the work into your own business is a definite investment that gets almost immediate return.
And you can say that about a craft too. Yeah. So if even if it's not your business, if it's your craft, if you're a lifetime hospitality person, you're a waiter, then waiting tables is your craft. If you come to work and you put in the just go through the motions, you're not putting in the work. You're not becoming better at your job. And ultimately, your financial well-being is tied to how good you are at your job. So work. It means work. Put work into your craft. Become the best, whatever you are.
Exactly.
Be the best.
Like if you want to do, and again, maybe you won't be the best, but you'll definitely be better. Yeah. You'll definitely be good.
You'll be reaching your max.
Yeah.
You'll be maxing out.
As a person that grew up on the East Coast, I think you guys are really describing kind of like an East Coast work ethic that other parts of the country don't exactly enjoy. And I actually attribute part of my success to the fact that I translated some of my East Coast work ethic to the West Coast.
Oh, yeah. One of my East Coast friends, I was out, this is going back like 12 years or so, but was out in Bay Area hanging out. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, what time you got to be at work today? And he's like, oh, man, between like 4 and 5. I was like,
yeah,
between
they
4 and 5.
Like, late.
4 or 5. He's like, oh, my boss is cool, man. I'm like, no, it's 4 or it's 5 or it's 4:30, but there's a time.
The funny thing, though, Eric, is, you know, I'm a reverse transplant from you. So I grew up in the Bay Area and I came out here. I think my work ethic clearly just came from my family and they worked and I started working at a very young age. But I'll tell you, when I was a kid and on the West Coast, I work circles around everybody because people just have a different tempo. They just see life through a different pair of eyeballs.
They're pacing themselves. They don't want to give up all their great ideas, you know, or give in every way possible. And I'm like, but that stuff is not, you don't save that up. Right now, this project right here, you should be throwing all your arsenal at this because that's the most interesting way to be is always throw your full arsenal at everything.
But you're not going to get chewed up and spit out. Like on the East Coast, that's like a thing. Like you will come here thinking you're good at something and you will just get destroyed.
What's that Jay-Z song? Your mom took a bus trip. Now she's got a bus stop. Everybody ride her, right? Something like that. Like, yeah, New York.
That was pretty good. Keep
people.
It going.
Yo, you got flow.
Clearly, that wasn't planned. Otherwise, Jeet would have put in the song in the background.
Jeet just had a heart attack. He was like, "Oh my god, I've never heard him such a
beautiful
voice."
That would have been great. So, employees only is also in L.A. and in Miami. And is there another one?
There's all right. What do we have right now? We got L.A., Sydney, Hong Kong, Singapore.
Shit.
And yeah.
That's our most international.
Is there a new Miami? Did I make that up?
There was Miami, and now there's going to be a new Miami.
Oh.
We're moving locations.
Do you get? Are you moving with it? Do you get to go hang out there for a bit?
I love New York.
He's born and raised in New York. Where did you go to high school again?
Well, I grew up on Long Island. Not proud of it.
Sorry for our Long Island listeners.
And I love Long Island.
Yeah.
You like the North Fork.
I like all of Long Island, really.
And then when I was like, I think 15, I moved to this tiny little town upstate about an hour out of Syracuse.
Oh, wow.
And, yeah, I kind of worked up there for a while.
And then you came running down to the city.
Came back to New York, and I've just been working here. The thing I love about New York, especially with that whole work thing, is no matter what you do here, if you don't, like, work your ass off, you're done. And that's the greatest motivator.
It's true.
New York kicks you out. So,
yeah, I love working in New York. I love living here. EO New York's fun.
Hey, Eric, what's the top story Alameda Sun, today's issue? Top story.
Kind of a fun thing that I think all our listeners can relate to is the fact that we had a visit from the C-SPAN bus last week. The C-SPAN bus. You guys are familiar with that, yeah. Of course, right?
That's like college football guys going to different universities to broadcast.
I've only seen it once at the Book Expo here in New York at the Javits Center.
Oh, you did see it. Cool. Yeah, it's like a little mobile, television studio, and they bring it around to different schools. They've been to all 50 states, including Hawaii, with a little help from a barge. And the bus came by Alameda last week and visited one of our local high schools. So
quiet news
week,
huh? I dropped
by there and checked it out. Well,
a bus.
I was trying
a
to
bus came.
People
to
would
Alameda.
Relate to. Last time you made fun of me for being too hyper-local. This time you make fun of me for being too fluffy.
You realize, Eric, that no matter what you say, he will make fun of it.
Yeah.
Is just that right?
Okay. I'm pretty sure that's the pattern that we've established here.
Our local paper had, Barr, the attorney general, saying he's not going to testify to the
You know
house.
He's setting you up with this one, right? He's like, he has it circled on his list where he's like, this is where I make a joke.
It's like New York and California. The Yankees just swept the Giants, you know.
Boom.
We're the New York team, you know. We always have to play around with the other cities, if you will. So thanks for being on, everybody.
Yeah, thanks for a great show, guys. Joe, you're welcome back anytime. Brandon, yep. Patrick, always a pleasure to co-host with you.
Oh, yes. Man. It feels like this is our last episode
no,
ever.
No. See everybody next week. Have a good one, guys. Happy Thursday.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network. Food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.